This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Lefty Pinkos. Good evening, Patrick.
Good evening, Emma. It's wonderful to be here as always.
But it is. The week's come around very quickly. And tonight we're going to be talking about LGBTI networks in workplaces. Just over a week ago, Australia's top 20 employers for LGBTI employees were announced. The awards were determined using Pride and Diversity's Australian Workplace Equality Index. Presenting the awards at the ceremony, the Honourable Michael Kirby, AC, said, "I applaud all the organisations here today and indeed individuals who have been played critical roles in their ongoing commitment and support of their LGBTI employees and colleagues. While many employees feel comfortable to be themselves at work, let's not lose sight of the fact that many more do not. Where we stand today is still not good enough. The more inclusive your workplace culture, the more likely people will be to engage, respect and contribute to the organisation they're working for." And a thought I had this afternoon about that quote was, in light of all the marriage equality noise that's going on, people tend to think that once that battle is won, it's all good. And it's like giving women the vote. Sorry, no. And with LGBTI inclusion, no, it's not the the battle isn't won.
It's interesting that you use the comparison between that and women's rights, because as we know, the beginning of women's rights with women's suffrage, it was women who owned land who were allowed to vote, not all women getting the vote. And particularly what's interesting about the people who are included in the Equality Index, wonderful companies and wonderful people, but also where they, what type of fields they're in, and it's interesting to see those patterns.
Yeah. So tonight we're joined on the phone from Sydney by Lynn Search, who is the Workplace Education and Relationship Manager at Pride and Diversity, Australia's first and only national not-for-profit employer support program for all aspects of LGBTI workplace inclusion. They're also the developers of the Australian Workplace Equality Index, Australia's definitive national benchmarking for LGBTI inclusion initiatives. Lynn's going to talk to us about some of the attributes of the 20 best employers for LGBTI employees and take us through some of the things these employers have done over the years to become not only more inclusive, but to be powerhouses in this area, particularly with their employee networks. Lynn, after all that, welcome to Lefty Pinkos.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Emma. Thanks, Patrick. It's great to be here.
We are very pleased you can give us the time this evening. Firstly, can you explain just briefly how these employers were measured for the awards?
Absolutely, Emma. The awards are actually a byproduct of that which you just mentioned, the Australian Workplace Equality Index, otherwise known as the AWEI. Of course, we all love a good acronym. And while many of the awards nomination processes actually, you know, that we see across Australia and beyond generally would boast a much quicker and less cumbersome submission process, if you like, the AWEI is extremely comprehensive and, in fact, very much evidence-based, and therefore it does take some time to complete. And certainly many of our organisations, both members and non-members of Pride and Diversity that do participate in the index can attest to that. But look, employers are basically asked a series of very specific questions in relation to areas that directly or indirectly impact inclusion across the workplace in LGBTI inclusion. And evidence may, you know, it may entail a detailed response or a description of a process, or it might look like a screenshot of supporting documentation, which really validates their responses and ensures, and this is important, that, you know, all employers are measured on not only the same criteria, but are also allowed a bit of flexibility in their approach in order to meet the criteria. So, you know, rather than being, I guess, a nomination-style award process as such, something that not all people are aware of is that the index itself is highly evidence-based. It is actually open to all employers across Australia. You don't have to be a Pride and Diversity member to participate, and participation's free. So if we look at the current index and how it measures practice, to answer your question, we look at things like, how inclusive are your policies? How inclusive are your practices? If I identify as LGBTI in the workplace today, could I potentially read myself out of a policy, for example. But it goes further than that, of course. It looks at your culture, how visible your network is, how effective your employee network is participating in this particular work across the organisation, and what areas of development are you providing for your staff? Is there awareness training? Are you monitoring? And are you seeking engagement from, or are you expecting LGBTI inclusion more broadly across and beyond with your suppliers? So there's many different elements, and it's very, very much evidence-based.
And they demonstrate quite a level of commitment just by putting themselves up.
Most definitely.
For this. Now, you award top 20. How many employers submit their D&I credentials?
Well, look, we saw a 38% increase in full index benchmarking submissions this year. So we had a total of 58 organisations across Australia submit to the index itself. And as a part of the index, we also provide what is known as the accompanying annual employee survey. And we've seen a huge increase also in the amount of participants in that survey. We had over 9,000 employees across Australian workplaces participate in the survey this year, in the last 12 months, which gives us some really robust data on the lived experience of being LGBTI in the workplace today. So not only are we seeing a huge increase on the amount of employers participating in the index, but also a significant increase in the amount of employees participating in the accompanying survey as well.
Now, there are things these top employers all do. They're common attributes that work well with all employers.
Well, look, what we're really looking for, or what we're really looking at with our top employers this year, is we're looking at them as great examples now of what is, or what could be constituted as a good practice in Australia. So with all of these employees working in this space for some time now, if we look at the top employers, LGBTI inclusion is really becoming embedded into their cultural DNA, if you will. So they're continuing to show, you know, varying levels of visibility and support to not only their employee networks, but also more broadly to their staff who identify as LGBTI. Many are, if we want to see some patterns and some trends, many are developing and indeed providing their own internal training programs now that incorporate LGBTI workplace inclusion to a large number of staff. And, you know, these employers also have notably active executive sponsors who are really finding creative ways to get the messages out there.
And we'll come to that later. For a business who doesn't do this stuff, what's the compelling business case to get them across the line so that they would commence work in this area?
Yeah, look, I mean, I guess the impact for business is multidimensional because more and more leading organisations are now realising, Emma, that this is the new imperative, you know. If we're going to go to market priding ourselves on being an inclusive workplace, it's not enough anymore just to do perhaps one or two things right in the diversity and inclusion space. I mean, an example of that might be organisations that are doing some phenomenal work in gender diversity. Now, while that's very important, absolutely, I'm a woman myself, not to take away from that at all, We do know that more and more organisations are realising that we need to bring everyone to the table. And not only that, but prospective employees, graduates, job seekers, they're really becoming savvy and they're expecting this of their workplaces now to be active in LGBTI inclusion. And this is coming from individuals, whether they identify as LGBTI or not. So it's really about, you know, that old attracting and retaining the best talent from the entire talent pool, but also the fact that legislation is changing. So not only is it the right thing to do, not only is it the new imperative and there's a competitive advantage, but it's also the law.
Now, do all employers who do well in this space and in the awards and the index, do they all have employee LGBTI networks?
No, and that's a great question. Not all employees will have an employee network. We have some participants or, you know, workplaces that take part and participate in the index that are very small employers. You know, we're talking about some organisations or workplaces, I should say, with less than 150 staff members. So for these smaller organisations or these smaller workplaces, the index is actually marked at a different level. So, you know, with a different stick, if you will, because we can't compare apples with oranges. So for smaller organisations, there's a slightly different submission submission documents there that they're marked by. And with that, some of these employees won't have networks as such because they are just too small. But what it's really about is the messaging that they're sending across. How effectively are they communicating inclusion to the employees that they do have? That's what's important.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. This is Lefty Pinkos, and we're talking with Lynn Search from Pride and Diversity about LGBTI networks and, I guess, it's a visible inclusion of LGBTI folk and issues in the workplace. Now, Lynn, Justice Kirby made a comment about LGBTI employees who do not feel comfortable to be themselves at work. How damaging to a business and to the employees is it when a group of employees have to constantly filter themselves at work? And is this taken seriously as an issue?
Yeah, look, just under 2 short years ago, we were analysing data from the annual employee survey, in which, by the way, thousands of individuals across many organisations were surveyed. And that data gave us a really compelling truth. Out of those surveyed who identified as gay, lesbian or bisexual, 67% told us that they're not out to their manager. So while LGBTI inclusion, I guess, is not about forcing people to come out, and that's important, it's not about expecting people to be out, what the research is telling us is that there is still a significant amount of people spending a significant amount of time at work, and we know how many of our waking hours we spend there, many of us, and essentially we're talking about individuals hiding a core part of who they are, as Justice Kirby mentioned. So, you know, our orientation and our identity, while it's not the most important part of us, it's not the only part of who we are, it certainly is a core part of us. And the impact that this has, this self-editing, this disengaging, this hiding on an individual is huge over time. You know, we see reports of impacts to one's well-being, one's health, in some cases one's mental health, in others, in some reports, some physical health can occur, you know, challenges there. So while there are absolutely impacts on the individual, there are also impacts on the organisation. You know, and what the research tells us is that individuals will either suffer in silence or walk and find an organisation that is active in this space and is clearly creating a culture where everybody counts.
I was just curious, just to ask a follow-up question, just about the survey 2 years ago. Was it particularly based on sexualities? Because you mentioned gay, lesbian, bisexual, or did it also encompass expressions of gender and gender identities?
Yeah, great. We actually included all LGBTI, yeah. And that's really important.
Okay.
The statistic that I've responded to there and utilised there is specific to orientation. But let me tell you that, and this is important as well, that for our listeners to hear, that the survey of recent years, and indeed even as close to the last year's survey, is showing us quite loudly that our transgender employees are having a harder time at work in many areas than those of us who perhaps identify as L, G or B.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was just wanted to follow up on that, because in mainstream media, it's becoming a lot more aware of the transgender community, and it is definitely a common pattern that I'm hearing is that there's a lot more difficulty in the workplace. So I'm very, very glad to hear that. Sorry, Emma, you're set up ready for this.
When an employer, a business, has a group of employees that wish to build an employee network, can it be done with everyone remaining in the closet? Or does it help if you've got some overt out LGBTI employees to take the lead?
Look, we do need out role models. We do need individuals to stand up and be counted. And you know what we find? There's something really special about LGBTI employee networks across Australian workplaces in my experience of recent years.
Where they have the best fashion shows? Yes.
They have the best fashion shows, fabulous networking events.
Sorry, I couldn't resist that. I'm sorry.
Let me tell you. Yes, all of the above. And they're generally made up of extremely dedicated, driven, and particularly passionate employees who are out and who are willing to drive, you know, this very important work forward within their organisations. And, you know, one big thing we ask of our role models and also our straight allies, which hopefully we'll touch on a bit later, one of the things we can ask of these people is courage. Yeah? I mean, and look, if you will, you know, allow me this, I really like to quote one of my own out role models, Brené Brown, because she says that, you know, courage is a heart word, and the root of courage is cor, which is the Latin word for heart. Now, in its earliest forms, the word courage meant to speak one's mind by telling all one's heart. And over time, this definition has changed. And today, we, you know, we typically associate courage with, I don't know, heroic and brave deeds. But this definition fails to recognise one important thing, and that is that that inner strength and that level of commitment that is required of us, all of us, to actually speak honestly and openly about who we are and about our experiences, whether they be good or bad. So a powerful LGBTI role model in an effective employee network, or indeed anywhere in the workplace, does just that, you know, shows courage.
For those employees that don't have that level of courage and confidence in the workplace, and it would depend on their workplace, the type of work groups they work in.
Definitely.
How long does it take for them to learn to trust the LGBTI network? That it is a safe thing for them to be involved with.
Yeah, look, it certainly will be interesting to be able to see the data that's currently being analysed here at Pride in Diversity from our current annual employee survey, and how many people now feel comfortable within themselves. One of the key factors and results of that survey of recent years told us that because of inclusion initiatives being undertaken in workplaces, more and more individuals are feeling confident and comfortable in their own sexual orientation. And I think that's, we at Pride and Diversity think that's a really, really powerful and very special thing. But look, coming out is such a personal decision, right? I mean, we know this. It's only something that one can or even should do if and when that individual's ready. So, you know, I would say it's not as much about how long can it take, but more so how visible is your network, or how visible is your organisation in effectively communicating out and creating a truly inclusive culture, so that individuals really know that they can be themselves and that diversity of thought will be celebrated.
Now, you mentioned executive sponsorship.
Yes.
How high should you go?
Look, really, sky's the limit. The higher, the better. You know, we're beginning to see not only senior leadership teams or the equivalent for that matter, but also CEOs now, you know, finding creative ways to come out, in active support of LGBTI inclusion, you know, by speaking out on the importance of corporate citizenship, by speaking out on the importance of LGBTI inclusion in general within their organisation, both internally and externally. And look, while this is great, I think that rather than how high should you go, it's important to know that when seeking out an executive sponsor, it's really about finding leaders who will be willing to advocate both internally and externally for the work that you're doing, and also willing to share, and this is important, willing to share their own personal story, whatever it might be, into why inclusion is important to them, because that speaks volumes.
Now, let's talk about allies. How essential are straight allies to an LGBTI network?
Allies are certainly essential, absolutely essential, and indeed make up, you know, some of the most passionate players across many workplaces today, across many networks as well. You know, people become allies for many different reasons. You know, whatever your key driver, it's important to know the value that one plays just in their role as an ally and how much value that carries, you know, because really it is just about standing up and speaking out where and whenever it's appropriate and being willing to call out behaviours or even perhaps non-inclusive language and standing beside our LGBTI colleagues and friends and mates and saying, you know what, this matters. And again, sharing personal stories is key as we all work together in, you know, creating a better environment for everyone.
Now, when we look at your top 20, and I did the same thing with the top 100 of the Stonewall collate in the UK.
Yeah.
And it is predominantly consulting firms, banks, other financial institutions, service industries. There's not a lot of manufacturing, heavy industry. Is it predominantly the service sector that are doing this?
Look, no, it's not. We are certainly seeing many organisations engage in the index from a variety of sectors and industries, both big and small organisations, I will say, and also both private and public sector. What we are seeing is a real trend at the moment, and perhaps competition has something to do with this, I don't know, but with the financial industries, the banking and financial industries, particularly in the last 12 to 24 months, really starting to, you know, ride up the ladder board there. Prior to that, we saw substantial work being done in relation to the leaderboard from professional services. Mm. But certainly we also see public sector and you know, more industrial, you know, players in there. You know, the likes of Curtin University coming up top, you know, very close to the top within the top five, and also Lendlease coming in top 10. You know, we are seeing both sectors. But, yeah, look, I think a bit of competitive advantage may be there with others. But, you know, there's a very important thing that we haven't raised yet, and that is to say that, you know, we've seen such a shift in practice in recent years as the index continues to move more and more organisations, to gauge, to monitor and to move more and more organisations across and, you know, into what we hope to be best practice at an international standard eventually. And as we're seeing that happen and that shift occur, we know that, you know, some organisations who are now coming in at what we call our bronze tier employer, which haven't quite made the top 20, but they're really getting there. They really are still active employers. They're doing a significant amount of work. And in fact, the same calibre of result that these bronze tier employers are just out of the top 20 are achieving comes to around the same calibre of result that we were seeing our employer of the year just a few short years ago. So every participant is making significant change. And really, the leaderboard, as great as it is only as relevant to what the person next to you is doing. And you really have little control over that. So what we say to our members and non-members alike who participate in the index, it's about your score and progressing that each year.
Nothing like a bit of competition. We will watch the scores over the coming years and encourage any employers who are not participating in these sorts of D&I activities to get on board. Lynn Search, thank you so much for joining us. We've run out of time and we appreciate your thoughts and comments this evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Emma. Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you very much, everyone. Lynn. You're here with Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.